Good evening. Let's call to order the Board of Library Trustee meeting of August 4, 2025 at 7 p.m. The city does not tolerate disruptive behavior in our meetings. Sunnyvale prides itself on the rich diversity of our residents. We are committed to creating a culture of belonging where members of our diverse community feel included, safe, and respected. This board meeting is considered a limited public forum, which means the board can regulate the time, place, and manner of speech. Speaker comments must be limited to agenda item being considered by the board for the consent calendar or public hearing items. Speaker comments during oral communication must be limited to matters within the board's authority, generally referred to as within the board's subject matter jurisdiction. If a speaker's comments are not related to an agenda item, the presiding officer will rule the speaker out of order. A speaker will not be ruled out of order because of a disagreement with the content of their speech. Location and online meeting details are available on the Board of Library Trustees agenda. Use the Show Captions button to view captions on Zoom. Comments on matters not on the agenda or presentation items must be submitted prior to the time I call the item for oral communications. Comments on the agenda item must be submitted prior to the time I close the public hearing on the agenda item. Speakers are requested to keep their comments to the time period set for public comments for the agenda item, which will be strictly enforced. Guidelines are posted on the city website and on the Board of Library Trustee meeting agenda. Please join me in the salute to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of the Republic, which is one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Recording officer, may we please have the roll call?
Yes. Vice Chair Jitakonda?
Here.
Board Member Hugh?
Here.
Board Member Hott?
Here.
Board Member Liu? Board Member Lamb?
Here.
We have four board members present.
Moving on to our next item, 25-0780. Is there a staff presentation?
Yeah, yes, there is. I'd like to see, we're doing EAI first. Okay, so this is Nick and Tommy, who are both librarians. Nick is in youth and children's services, and Tommy is in adult services, and they're going to co-present on our equity, access, and inclusion initiatives.
Good evening, Board of Library Trustees and fellow library staff. I'll introduce myself again. I am Nick Segron, librarian for youth services.
And I am Tommy. I am adult services librarian. And we're going to present to you the update on library services regarding equity, access, and inclusion for fiscal year 2024-25. The presentation will begin with information about our collections, then move on to library programs and outreach services. Sorry, next slide. I should have said that first. Oh, that's my fault. There we go. Okay. So overall collection update. Equity, access, and inclusion, our current view. So Collection HQ, which is our, I guess, software is what you would call it, that we use to collect this data, categorizes 20.3% of our collection as EAI titles, up from 19.8% last year. Topics include race, culture, gender, sexuality, religion, mental health, and neurodiversity and disabilities. EAI popular fiction topics. Shown are some of the more popular EAI topics represented in our fiction collections. 15.9% of the adult fiction collection, 20.8% of the juvenile fiction collection, and 41.1% of the teen fiction collection have an EAI component. So that's across the board of those collections. And this is EAI popular nonfiction topics. So 19.6% of the adult collection, 18.2% of the juvenile collection, and 61.2% of the teen collection have that EAI component. And this is the trend view. Looking at that trend view, you'll see that the EAI categories have increased over time since 2016, with significant increases every year beginning in 2019. Our teen collection has significantly more titles related to EAI, but our adult and juvenile collections have been increasing as well.
Now I will present our language collections. I'll mention that to be a more inclusive and welcoming place, we recently changed the title of our language collections from foreign languages to world languages. This table features our world language collection for adults. It is sorted from top to bottom by total fiscal year circulation as of June 30th, 2025. According to the most recent US Census data, 52% of Sunnyvale residents identify as Asian, and our world language collection reflects that demographic, with several Asian languages represented. More than half of the collection consists of Chinese language books, and they are popular with a circulation ratio of three circulations to every one book. Russian is second in circulation and also second in terms of collection size. This is our children's world language collection, sorted by total circulation in the prior fiscal year. Chinese is the highest circulating language in children's also. However, for children, Spanish is second in total circulation. And we do have a larger Spanish language collection to support that. Things of note, there was a 17% increase in circulation for Japanese language items from the prior fiscal year. I believe our Japanese language story times contributed to that increase. Even more impressive, the children's French collection experienced a 63% increase in circulation compared to last year. That was probably assisted by one of our librarians buying French books in France during her vacation to bolster the authenticity and quality of our French collection. We do have some dedicated librarians.
All right, so ability inclusion. We have digital content. Our ebooks, e-audiobooks, and movie streaming services can be accessed from anywhere with an internet connection, making it easier for patrons who have limited mobility or health concerns to come to the library building. Furthermore, most ebooks have adjustable font size for users with low vision, and there's other little things in there to help with vision as well. Our materials and services for different needs. There are roughly 3,557 large print titles in our adult and teen collections. And there are 2,794 adult audiobooks in our collection. This includes 250 in Russian and 39 in Spanish. And I believe that's just the books on CD, right? Yeah, so not the digital content, which would increase that number. Homebound delivery. This is our homebound delivery program where we are able to provide materials to clients in Sunnyvale that are unable to come to the library due to disability or other circumstances. Most of the clients are seniors, some of whom experience memory loss and are unable to manage their own library accounts. If we are unable to communicate with clients, then we work with their family members or caretakers to ensure they are receiving materials they like and meet their needs. We service one facility and six individual clients that receive non-English materials. And programs and outreach. So this past year, we've done over 100 programs celebrating culture, language, and diversity. Passport to Asia was our summer reading celebration this last summer, so a little over, or almost a year ago at this point. The summer reading theme was Adventure Begins at Your Library, and we thought a great way to celebrate adventure was to share cultural experiences across the Asian continent. We also had, so in the pictures there, we had Pampa Dance Academy perform traditional Indian dances for Diwali. I believe that was in October. We had Folklorico Ensemble Colibri perform traditional Mexican dances for Hispanic Heritage Month, also in October. And Red Panda Acrobats for Lunar New Year in January. Those are just some highlights, but we've had plenty throughout the year as well.
Throughout the year, Cultural Heritage Months provide special opportunities to host large performances and to create unique programs and activities to celebrate those cultures. We have always had STEM classes, but this past year, we created a series of STEM classes themed to Cultural Heritage Months. The top picture was one of those STEM programs. Participants learned the story of Emily Roebling for Women's History Month. She transcended barriers in becoming the lead engineer to complete the construction of the Brooklyn Bridge in 1883. And then kids built their own bridge, just like Emily. In September, we held an Aztec dance performance by Calpulli Tonaleque, it's fun to say every time, to celebrate Hispanic Heritage Month. That was one of the 10 weekend cultural performances held at the library throughout the year. We also plan in-library activities to celebrate cultural traditions and holidays, such as Tanabata, which is the bottom right picture. Participants wrote down wishes on paper and hung them from a bamboo tree in the library. Oh, that's from me. We have a multilingual community, and we continue to seek opportunities to offer programs in various languages. Our Japanese language story times began this past fiscal year, and we also have ongoing bilingual story times in Spanish and English. We have also offered programs in Mandarin and hosted several popular Spanish language performers listed there. And lastly, one popular inclusive program that we have has been our sensory story times for neurodivergent children, pictured on the bottom right. Still. For youth services, we continue to strengthen our partnerships with Sunnyvale Schools. We held lunchtime librarian sessions at Columbia Middle School, as well as STEM programs at Columbia Neighborhood Center for middle school students in North Sunnyvale. We made several visits to Meridian Apartments to provide information about library resources and offered free books for their kids. We also partnered with Recreation Services to hold story times and STEM programs for their summer camps. Library displays and online book lists provide opportunities to highlight diverse books. Library displays create an inclusive environment where individuals of different backgrounds can see themselves reflected in library materials, while also exposing community members to varied viewpoints and experiences. Recently, we launched the I'm Your Neighbor Welcoming Collection. That's the picture on the right. The poster above the collection states, "This collection celebrates our immigrants and new generation families, friends, and neighbors. Together we can read to welcome, read to belong."
All right, so our inclusive programming for adult services, this is our ongoing programs that we have occurring regularly, usually in a monthly timeframe. So this year we've added Spanish language book group to our list of regular programs. This book group has had significant success, including an author talk from Francisca Solar. That was actually really great. I believe she offered that on her own. We didn't have to seek her out. So that was awesome. We also launched our adult literacy program called Level Up Literacy last August. And we have about 20 learners so far and are adding new learners every month. So that has been a huge success for us at this point. And community outreach and partner programs for adult services. These are highlights of some of the partnership programs for underserved communities. We've done some outreach with Mid-Penn Housing in the late spring and early summer of this last fiscal year. So that's a good one for us in adult services. I really want to highlight this photo, though. That is from our Career Online High School program. And that is one of our recent graduates who went through the program and completed and got their high school diploma, essentially. So that's one of the great successes we've had there, along with the others listed on that list of programs that we offer. And that's it. Any questions?
Any board members have comments or questions for the staff? Go ahead, board member Lim.
Thank you so much for the presentation. I know you do many, many things beyond the presentation that you described. I'm really curious about the many programs, whether it's the world languages, whether it's the various access and inclusion topics. How do you prioritize amongst all these different needs, whether it is having Japanese or Spanish or Russian languages as your number two, number three language collections, or things like having mental and emotional health being one of the topics and prioritizing resources?
Yeah, in terms of the language collections, we based a lot of that on our circulation statistics. So that really dictates what we should be buying more of. If we see an uptick in any particular language, then we know that we probably need to increase that collection. And I think the same goes for a lot of the other categories in there. If we notice an uptick in a specific topic or theme, we'll try to look at what needs to come in. Could also be other factors, like maybe we're seeing more books of a certain topic getting reviewed and highly praised. And so that's an indication that we probably want to add them to our collection if other people are talking about them. Do you want to add anything on that, Nick?
Sometimes it's also about the accessibility of what books, especially world language books, that we can access, how easy it is. That's why if you notice that the children's had a very large Spanish collection for kids, is because we're able to access and purchase more of those. And I gave the example of our French collection where, we had to get the books actually from France. So it's harder to sometimes acquire certain language books. And that affects the collection a little bit. Managers could probably provide more input on that. And as far as what programs we do, I know if we're open to a wide variety of programs, and as many as we can fit in, we try to fit in. So sometimes it's about whether we find a good partner, community partner, to host that program, affects whether we go ahead with it or not. So we have some other language programs in the works because we've met new community partners to start new language programs. So that affects those programs that we come up with sometimes.
Thank you.
Any other board member? Yes, board member Hu.
So my thoughts are kind of all over the place, but it's always very pleasing to hear about our efforts in EAI and the progress that we're making. The first thing, if we go back to the statistics slide, specifically about the teen collection, I just had a quick question about that. It has to do with, can you sort of talk through why the teen EAI category increases so rapidly? And does that have anything to do with that collection having more turnover and the books going through? I know that just from when I was in high school, a lot of the books that I read aren't there anymore. They've probably been, changed for more recent books. And I was curious if that's the reason.
Do you want me to take that one? Okay, I would say publishing. I think as far as teen books, there's been a focus on publishing books with EAI topics, which is so we are able to provide more. And the nature of the youth, I think, are more open to those types of books. So just the combination of having more publishers publish EAI books, and then teens willing to check those out and wanting those perspectives.
That's great to hear. It's really nice. Every time now and again, I take a look through those shelves, and it takes me back to when I was hanging out in the teens section of the library. I know. The next thing that I have has to do with the way that patrons go about like requesting books. And as much as we'd like to, we can't just get every book under the sun. And something that I was wondering has to do with the approach that we take for books, and specifically EAI books, where if someone has a book that they want about a topic that we don't have, how do we sort of go through and increase our collection? Or do we, and is it sort of more a proactive approach by our staff who go out and search for these books and look at the reviews? Or do we wait for patrons to say, actually, this is the exact book that I want? And, or is it a combination of both? And what percentage, if you could break that down?
I don't think I have a percentage, but I can speak to, well, both parts of that. It is a combination of both. I think we do a really good job of actually getting ahead of it and purchasing these books. We do spend, that is one of the things that we do as librarians, is we look at the reviews, we look at, what's kind of going on with the various topics. And that kind of extends beyond just like EAI. The Dewey Decimal System kind of covers everything, or as much as it can for as old as that system is. So we kind of try to designate certain topic areas to people who have an interest, to our librarians that have an interest, have some kind of background in it, or those of us that are interested in learning more about these topics. So that's kind of how that breakdown works. And then we spend that time, or some of our time, reading the reviews, doing that research on them. We do take suggestions from people. We have something set up on our website, BiblioSuggest, for folks to go in and put in suggestions. And that's part of our collection development, is looking at those reviews and seeing, will they fit into our collection? Is the information still up to date? And if it is, how will we work this in? When we're not able to add something for, any reason, we look and see if it's available through Link Plus, which is a system of getting books from other libraries sent to us. So if we can't actually add it to our collection for any reason, we try to find a way around. So we do want to make sure that people are getting the books that they're interested in. So it's, like I said, a combination of those two things.
Yeah, that does make sense. One thing that I was sort of wondering about with the Link Plus like connection and how we're serving our community that way has to do with a topic that we touched on like three meetings ago with our privacy. So if someone's like, requesting a book and we don't have it in our collection, it's related to EAI, how are we sort of like, keeping their information private? Because I do know that that's something that we've, been working on, and it can also be, a struggle for people with, different sort of protected identities that unfortunately aren't as accepted as really they should be.
Yeah. So we don't share information to anybody other than the patron themselves. So if someone comes up asking about a book that their spouse borrowed, that their friend borrowed, we cannot share that with them unless that person themselves asks for it. We don't really retain any circulation information pertaining to what someone has borrowed unless they go into the online system and agree to that. So they have to turn that on themselves. And that would mostly be for their own use on our website. So the system we use, Sierra, we don't retain that. We can't really look at it. There's a few exceptions in terms of, like, you know, if a book was damaged, you know, are we able to get a hold of them and ask them about it? But that's very limited in terms of how far back that information goes. In terms of Link Plus, I can't really speak too much to it other than, you know, I think the other library that we're requesting from gets like a name, but I don't know if that's even, I don't even know if that's accurate. So
Link Plus is actually a system that in some ways we might actually like to have more data, but by nature of it being a collection that's a little more ephemeral, because the records are created only at the time when a request is made and then when the item is sort of done and we send it back, those records kind of disappear because they're not really part of our actual collection. So in some ways we often wish that we had more preservable and trackable data about what kinds of items are coming in through Link Plus, but we really don't have that actually. And so from a privacy standpoint, that's actually really good. It just doesn't exist really for us, even though we wish we could take more action on it. I think what it does is it puts a responsibility on our staff to just be paying attention and observing and, you know, anecdotally watching the kinds of things that people are tend to be checking out or requesting there or asking about. And that's part of gets back to your original question about, you know, how do we make these decisions? It really is kind of an art and science, you know, looking at data, but also really using their professional judgment based on the trend watching they're doing, whether that be through professional journals or just through conversations with our community.
That's great. I'm nearly done. This is, you know, it wouldn't be me commenting if I didn't ask a question sort of related to Library of Things. And something that I'm wondering about is, you know, how do we, you know, work EAI into Library of Things and specifically making it accessible for folks that maybe English isn't their first language? Because there's a lot of really excellent resources that we have. And I wonder if, you know, they're getting to the folks that would maybe want them, but, you know, might struggle with English or some of the materials that we put out. So if maybe you guys could speak to that or something to keep in mind.
Yeah, I think in terms of the adult collection, so a lot of the things that we offer come with instruction booklets, and a lot of those are printed in various languages. Now, I wish they would be printed in the dominant languages that we have here in Sunnyvale, but that's not always the case. But we do try to preserve those instructions the way that they're in the packaging, and we make those available. They come as part of the kits. So anything that has that kind of detailed instruction goes out with the patron, and we do our best to make sure that we can preserve it, if that means laminating it, if that means making it bigger so it's easier to read, that kind of thing. So we do take those steps. But I guess that is something to think about, maybe adding, finding a way to add instructions in the dominant languages that are not represented in those instructions. I don't know if you guys do anything different for YS.
Well, I could say that some of our Library of Things items are bilingual, mm-hmm. English, Spanish.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm almost just wondering about like the catalog, right? And how we're advertising these things, because, you know, as it relates to like the park passes, right? You know, I mean, okay, that's great. Anyone can go to a park and enjoy the nice natural beauty that we have in California. But, you know, does everyone know that, right? Because clearly there's, you know, it's super high in demand. And I'm just wondering, it's like, huh, right? We're definitely serving the folks that can speak English, that do speak, read, and write English. And, you know, get that advertising, but, you know, I really just want to make sure that that's going to everyone, especially, you know, because it's such a popular program, and there are folks in our community that, you know, English doesn't work for them. And yeah.
And I just wanted to jump in here and say thank you for always being a champion of the Library of Things. I love it too. We are trying our best to do EAI. Our waivers are in Chinese, Spanish, and English. We had those professionally translated. It's also important to know that not only does the marketing, are we going to change the language on the marketing to be more inclusive? We are also able to get the kits out to other folks who might need them. So one of our unhoused patrons made the request for having the auto repair toolkits. So that even though it's not necessarily a language barrier there, we are still trying to seek suggestions from the whole spectrum of our community. So I hope I hope that helps.
Yeah, that's great. And then the final comment that I have is just in relation to the World Languages story times. Hearing about the positive relationship between us doing programming in Japanese and then the increase in Japanese circulation, specifically for children's books, is really pleasant to hear. And clearly, it means our programming is working. So that's always super optimistic, and I love to see it. So thank you, guys.
Thank you, Board Member Hu. Board Member Hart?
I'm going to harp on the languages again a little bit. First of all, we keep saying Chinese, but as we all know, there's more than one Chinese language. So I was just wondering, is there a breakdown of are they all Mandarin? Is it, or is there, okay, somebody's raising their hand in the back there.
Hi, I'm Aiden. I'm one of the adult services librarians. So the many languages in Chinese, many of them share the same writing system. So for example, Mandarin and Cantonese, they're written the same way.
Okay.
So we have a mix of traditional Chinese and simplified Chinese, which are the two main writing systems. Mm-hmm. But languages like Mandarin, Cantonese, Shanghainese, those are spoken languages.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Great. Okay, thank you. Thank you for educating me. And then I was also wondering, so we have the breakdown of which languages we have and the circulation, but I was also wondering, does it correlate to like the breakdown of our demographics? Because we know we have a very large Asian population again, which is broken down into various Asian countries. Was there a lot of circulation of the Russian? Is that because I don't know what the demographics are for our Russian population. Are they, and it was, I was like, I was surprised to see that it was more than the Spanish, because I thought we had a larger Spanish speaking population than this, because we need more books in Spanish. I mean, I just sort of wondering how you decide how much to buy in each language and that kind of stuff. And I guess I get that access is also an issue, like what's available.
I think this is going to be me and Karina on this one. For adult services, part of the access is whether the items are available. And it has actually been baffling to me why we are buying Spanish language adult books and we're spending a lot of money, a generous budget, and it's not circulating as well. And I'm not sure why, and it's been baffling me. So it's really nice to have Karina here, who selects for children as well. And she was also helping with the adult Spanish language. So we're trying to work it out. And I actually think that Lakewood is going to be a wonderful crucible for us to be able to really find the right audience for our Spanish language collections. But yes, the Chinese language, traditional and simplified, that circs like crazy. But for some reason, the Spanish just doesn't. So I'll let you jump in if you like.
Yeah, and I do believe Shaughnessy touched a little bit on it, is the geographic barrier. So we do know that, the Spanish-speaking communities are at around Lakewood, North Sunnyvale. When I've spoken to them, at schools or community events, they've expressed that the main library here is very far for them. They love the concept of the library, and they wish they could attend more to more programming. I'm also hopeful that the Lakewood branch will kind of bridge that gap.
Okay, then that leads right into my next question. I know we have a huge digital collection because I use it all the time. So I'm wondering how much of that is also accessible, first of all, in other languages. And then also, do we have eBooks in Spanish? I don't know. I don't read Spanish, so I've never looked. But do we offer any sort of service to sort of teach people? Again, this comes, first of all, like whether they're in other languages, but also people who can't physically make it to the library. So I know we have the outreach for the delivery and all that, but do we teach people how to access the online objects that we have in the library?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. We'll start backwards here. I'll start with your last point. As someone who works the circulation desk and answers the reference phone line, we do get a lot of phone calls from folks asking for assistance with those things. So we do a lot of over the phone assistance with that. I think in terms of what I can speak to, I think that's the best that I can speak to on it. But it is something that happens, and it happens fairly frequently on a daily basis. So that is happening. The kind of the difficult thing, though, is, and we saw this during COVID lockdowns, was, how do you teach people from a distance to use technology when the best way to do it is through technology, or in that instance, the only way to do it was through technology? So that was a bit of a hurdle. But it is something that happens. Thank God phones are around and people are still using them. So that's the best I can say to it. Chauncey, I don't know if you have more to say to that. Okay.
I can speak a little bit more to the ebooks. There are even fewer ebooks in languages than there are in print books. So we do our best, but this honestly, the choice just isn't there.
But I mean, what about like our streaming media, like the Canopy and like stuff,
Yeah, those have subtitles and different spoken languages that you can listen to. So in that case, yes.
And then just one last question, because we might have talked about this in a different meeting that I might have missed, but it just what was the can you give me some more information on the Level Up Literacy program? Because I don't know what that is.
I would love to give you more information about the Level Up Literacy. So that is something we have been working very hard on for, I think at this point, a year, because we launched it in August. And before that, we had spent a lot of time planning it. Right now, it's a one-on-one kind of tutoring process where we recruit volunteers to basically just teach people one-on-one literacy skills. And that ranges from reading, writing, and in a lot of cases, speaking. There's a lot of overlap there with, speaking, reading, and writing. So in some ways it is like a, assisting with English speaking. And we've seen people be very consistent with coming in. We've had very little number of folks drop out or be inconsistent. So I'd say it's pretty successful at this point, and we're still growing it. We're not just adding more students or learners and tutors. We're also working on different ways that we can, incorporate more people, whether that's small classes, one-off classes, events, outreach, different programs that we can incorporate into our regular programming at the library. If there's anything more specific that you have a question about, I'd be more than happy to answer that.
It sounds like you want to talk about it as much as possible.
Yeah, it's like we
It's
like I
like you're
said.
in the Library of Things and you're in the
We
little literacy.
we will be in the next couple of months. We are looking to bring a our literacy coordinator to come and speak to the board.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Board Member Hart. Thank you, Nick and Tommy, for this wonderful detailed presentation. I have a very quick questions and one clarifying. First of all, thank you for doing the inclusivity program. I'm really very impressed with the homebound delivery, which is so much like include talks all about inclusivity. And I also appreciate the font size changing because it is so hard, especially with people with glasses, I would say. I think I really appreciate that. And one question I had, which is actually, I think it's wonderful that you do Japanese story time, which actually increases the circulation of those books. I was wondering, is that possible with other languages too? And the reason I ask this is some of the countries which you have mentioned, like Asian, they do some of the places I believe English is the primary language. But having what you're doing can build the bilingual skills. And especially the younger adults. So I think that's a great job. So would that kind of scenario change or encourage the other population patrons, young patrons, to come and participate and probably build their bilingual skills? So that was my curiosity. Is it possible to bring in more of story time for the other languages? I know we spoke about Mandarin and Japanese.
Well, we are, I am currently working on planning a Hindi story time, Hindi-English story time. I believe we're working to see if we can get other languages like a Hebrew story time. And it really depends on what type of community partners we can connect with to help us do those types of story times. But yes, for example, the Japanese story times, we saw when we had those story times, we had a lot of Japanese families just come in, hang out before and after the story time. That helped increase the circulation. So we're hoping to add those two new story time languages and continue those and hopefully balloon it from there.
Then that would be great. And I think that will help the young adults to build their language skills. And the other clarifying question I had in one of the slides, if we did talk about Sunnyvale School District, I don't know which slide that was, but was it intentionally written that way, or do you even cover the Fremont Union High School District in one of your slides?
Okay. So right now we do have a strong partnership with the Sunnyvale School District. We are currently onboarding two new teen librarians who will be reaching out to Fremont, the Fremont Union High School District. So we hope to really build a partnership with the middle and high schools.
Wonderful. Because Fremont High School and Homestead still fall under Sunnyvale. And I know the other three schools have another library covering them. Well, that shouldn't stop them from coming to Sunnyvale, but I'm just curious. Well, once again, thank you so much for all of you do. I feel this library is a place for people who are looking for help, or I think it's like a beacon. So thank you all.
Can I just add one last thing, maybe a final word? We really appreciate a lot of the input you've given today. And our staff have spoken a lot about some of the challenges, I think, that we face when we're trying to expand these programs, do more of, get access to some of these materials that are maybe challenges. I think, you know, one of the things for us also is hopefully it's really clear to you that we're not alone in our efforts in trying to increase these offerings. A lot of times we rely also on our partners and our vendors to be providing, you know, access. We need the ebooks published in these languages so that we can actually buy them, because we're not in the business of creating the ebooks themselves. So that often becomes a challenge. So this is another way thing we do is often advocate to our vendors and in through our library community large about and give them the messaging that this is something that our community is desiring and demanding that we offer, so that we need them to work with us to provide better access and provide these things for us to be able to purchase and to offer.
Appreciate that. All right. Thank you so much. Moving on to our next item, 25-0781. Is there a staff presentation?
Yes, there's a staff presentation. For our library marketing and outreach, we have Aiden Kwan, Adult Services Librarian, and Loriana Girizzo, who is a Youth Services Librarian.
Hello, everybody. So today we are presenting on library marketing and outreach. If you were here for our previous version of this presentation, a lot of the marketing segment will be the same. Not much has changed there, but we'll be able to talk about some of the new stuff that has happened and some of the more recent outreach that we've done. Okay. So this is just an outline of what the presentation is going to be. We're going to talk first about the marketing. We want to talk about our goals, kind of how we focus our efforts, and then we'll talk about the way that we actually do it for each of these sections, marketing and outreach. For marketing, our main goals are to increase awareness of library programs and services, communicate the library's value to the community, and attract potential employees, volunteers, and community partners to work with or at the library. And you'll see that that means that the way that we do marketing is very intentional to meet these goals. The primary channels that we have are our email newsletters. That's basically where we put most of our important messaging because it's the most viewed channel that we have. in building marketing for people who don't necessarily read our newsletter, but who come to the library and see what we have in the building, our social media channels, which are primarily Instagram and Facebook, our website, especially our website calendar, and out of building marketing, so marketing that we put out in the community. For the email newsletter, we have three newsletters for our three main age groups: the adult newsletter, the teen newsletter, and the kids newsletter. The adult newsletter is our biggest one. It currently has over 50,000 subscribers because when people sign up for a library card, we ask them if they want to sign up for the newsletter as well. And that is the default selection that it makes. If they have children with them, we'll often ask them if they also want to sign up for the children's newsletter, but that's sort of a separate step. We send out about 5 emails to the adult newsletter per month. There's one big one at the beginning of each month that lists all of the programs. That's kind of where, if we have a program that has a very limited number of seats, they often get filled up right away just from that beginning of the month newsletter. It also has our features of about new services or major events that are coming up. And then we have an additional email every week that promotes the upcoming programs for the next 10 days or so. And that is where most of the signups for our adult programs come from.
Hello. So I'm going to talk a little bit about our kids and teens newsletters. It works largely the same as the adult newsletters we send out, but on kind of for the children's one, we send at least one big newsletter a month, which has all the programs coming up. And that's the bulk of it for children's, because programs and collections are sort of the backbone of the children's department. So we'll send one big newsletter that has everything coming up. And then we will sometimes send supplemental newsletters throughout the month as needed for, let's say we're having a big, like a celebration, like for Lunar New Year, we would send another newsletter promoting that. Or if there's a program that we think is really cool but is not getting as many registrations, we will sometimes send a newsletter to increase some awareness around that program. And then we'll also highlight some homework help resources, databases, other things that are applicable to families with children. But also the bulk of our newsletter is dedicated to our many programs and story times. And in building marketing, we have a few ways that we do that. I think for the children's side, which is where I'm from, the print calendars are a huge resource. So that's just a monthly calendar we put out every month. Usually close to the end of the month, we'll put out the following month's calendar. And then flyers. Slideshows that happen in our children's and teens rooms and in our lobby for adult programs. And then also in building marketing at programs. So at the end of a program, we might announce some future program is coming up that is related. Or in the case of summer reading, at every program, we will talk about summer reading forever and ever. So this is an example of our children's and teens print calendar. This is a very popular one with families. As they've told us many times, they like to just put it up on the fridge and see everything. It helps. It's a little more accessible for families than going on our website calendar. Although all the information also exists on the website and also exists in our newsletter. But this is a nice kind of visual way to see the month. excuse me. We also can take these out to outreach events. So this is helpful when we're telling people who might not be aware of the library what kind of things we offer. We can show them this calendar and it's like, there's the proof of all the cool things that we're doing. And then we can point to things that might be interesting to them. Even in past summers, we've tried different ways to print the calendar or print the events that we have going on. And patrons have said many times that, no, we like this monthly calendar. So we are like gonna keep doing it. One of our colleagues, Christina, does a very good job making it adorable. And and it is translated in both English and Spanish. Currently, those are the two languages we offer it in. For social media, most of our social media, I would say 99% of our social media right now is Instagram or Facebook. I'm so sorry, yes. Our posts are largely about communicating the value of programs after they've happened. Thank you. What a good director we have. You want to take over for a second?
Yes, our posts are largely communicating value after the fact. We used to do more posts that were advertising upcoming programs, but then we
found that it meant that our feed was just a lot of dates and that they didn't really get a lot of engagement. People were really coming in because of the newsletter or other marketing that we were doing besides social media. So we decided to shift our social media presence to focus more on after the fact, when you can see you know, the photos and people who might be interested in working at the library or volunteering at the library can look at our social media and see here are all the wonderful things that we've done. And, you know, in those posts, we might also say, and keep an eye out for this thing coming up, but it's just a different way of communicating that information. We'll also have informational posts like saying that we're going to be a cooling center for an upcoming heat wave. We'll have a bit of advertising posts, but those will usually be limited to larger programs, like the large cultural programs that were mentioned in the previous presentation. And then occasionally we'll do engagement boosters, which might be like posting a meme or posting something like, tell us your favorite first line of a book. And that kind of just keeps people coming to the page because it's fun. And recently, there is a new city web and communications specialist whom we have started working with to be a little bit more strategic about our social media presence and also merge it better with the city's overall social media presence. So kind of have the city platforms and the interdepartmental, the different departments' platforms work together a little bit better. Okay, I realize that I just said the content of these upcoming slides without moving the slides forward, but you can see here's an example of posts that are communicating value. So they're photos of programs after the fact, and you'll also see, it's quite small, but you'll see the description. It talks about how we were going to have lion dancers at this event, but then we were meant to have them outside, but it started to rain. So our library staff worked hard to move the furniture around so that we could have the performance indoors. So that is a way of communicating to the community, this is how our library is working for you. And after social media, another one of our major marketing channels is our website. So we have a slideshow on the front that promotes our big programs and major service updates. So if you look at our website now, for example, it's showing summer reading at the front. And then if there's something like a new database that we want to get more eyes on, then we'll also put that on the front page of our website. Our calendar has all of our events that are coming up. So we do get a number of signups and walk-ins based on the calendar as well. And we had a redesign of the homepage some months back that reduced the bounce rate away from the website by 12% by making it overall more findable, or making content on the website more findable. So for out-of-building marketing, we do also go out into the community and we place flyers at other locations. The Senior Center has been a great partner to us. Sometimes we can just send them flyers that we think will appeal to their audience, and they'll print them out because they find that the seniors who use the Senior Center like to physically take the flyers with them. So they'll print out multiple copies for people to take. And then we also put flyers at schools and on Peach Jar. Did you want to add anything about that?
This is in for partnership with the Sunnyvale School District, who we are, you know, attend their district, library media specialists meeting. I'm trying to remember their title, right? So we make flyers available to those librarians who we have relationships with, and then out on Peach Jar, which is like the email newsletter for families in schools. That's about it. And now we're going to move on to the outreach part of our presentation. There's some goals for our outreach are increasing awareness of library programs and services. They're going to be similar goals to our social media goals. Reach non-library users using traditionally underserved, or including traditionally underserved communities, and build meaningful relationships with community members and stakeholders. And then the next few slides will be examples of how we do that. So the first few slides are about our outreach to children and families. So creating awareness, we do this by attending programs like open houses and back to school nights, like things like National Night Out tomorrow night, reading night, citywide festivals. So anytime that the library's out there with kind of some information about the library, we're helping, like in the case of Hands on the Arts with the craft,
But the goal of those attendants is to say, hey, we're the library. This is what our librarians look like. Here are some of the things that we offer and where they can find more information out if they're interested. And so these are some examples of last fiscal year, the attendance, the outreach events that we attended. It's easy. We got out to as much as we can, especially this month is also back to school nights coming up. So we're going to get right back out there and go to all those events. And it's a fun way for our librarians to get out of the building and kind of see our patrons where they're at in the community and kind of talk to more people than we typically get to. And the next section is kind of similar. We're reaching non-library users by bringing programs that we usually offer at the library to other locations. So for example, you see our STEM program at CNC with Nick, you might recognize from behind me. no, I mean, not behind me. He left. I was just like, thanks, blank. Fair. but these are family fun nights we do in Washington Park, which kind of arose out of necessity because we were outgrowing the program room for the audience we had for our summer entertainment nights. So we brought them out to the park, and then we also bring them to parks in North Sunnyvale this year at Fairwood Park. We do STEM programs at Columbia Neighborhood Center. One of our librarians attends lunchtime librarian at Columbia Middle School, where she brings like a craft in or an activity. So kind of unlike, differing from how we do open houses and back to school nights and events like that, these are more, here is a program that we do, we're bringing it to you, because we know sometimes you can't get to the library. So Storytime at Magical Bridge, we're bringing the full program out to an audience that maybe wouldn't know about the library's programs, or maybe, like we've discussed, if they know of our library programs, but getting to our library is a barrier for them. So we're bringing the programs to them. And then our last kind of goal is in our partnerships. So these are programs where we've reaching out with other city departments or other organizations within Sunnyvale to kind of create mutually beneficial relationships. So we are kind of combining our audiences through things like programs with our Sunnyvale sister city of Azuka. We have our librarians going out to the Meridian apartments and other low-income housing developments. And we're always seeking new relationships like this. Also think of the example of the organization that's helping with Japanese story time. An example of like, we love to seek out these community relationships because it just makes both of our groups stronger, because we can each bring some skill to the table and a new audience to the table. And as you can see, in the case of Japanese story time, it increases attendance and our collection. So that is a huge goal of our partnerships with other organizations.
On the adult side, we don't have as rigorous a focus on outreach or those statistics, but here are some of the things that we have done. So we also participate in events such as, you'll see there's a list there. One of the events that was where we did really successful outreach this year was the Sunnyvale Pride Fest. So on the adult side, we try to focus on things like that, where we're sort of hitting the demographic of like late teens to sort of up to middle-aged adults who don't have children, because we find that most of the adults who are coming to the library, they're adults with young children or they're seniors. So we're trying to target more of that age group when we go to this type of events. So at the Sunnyvale Pride Fest, that was very successful. We signed up a number of people for library cards. We also brought LGBTQ materials that we were able to lend out there. And there were quite a number of people, even though it wasn't that far from the library, it was at Plaza del Sol, who said that they don't normally go to the library, but we were able to tell them about the Library of Things and other unique things that we have at Sunnyvale that might not be at the other libraries that are closer to them. And so that was an example of very successful outreach that we did this year. And then another focus is on adults with disabilities, where most of our focus is on seniors, because that tends to be the largest population of people with disabilities in our community. So they talked in the previous group about our home or homebound delivery program. But we also do offsite programming at locations that are easier for people to reach, such as our Senior Center book group that meets at the Senior Center once a month for people who are already going to that location. We also
Another one of our programs that's important for people with disabilities is our monthly book group, because that used to meet at the library in person, but during the COVID lockdowns, we moved it online. And then a lot of the people who were attending said that it was actually a lot easier for them to attend because they didn't have to deal with going physically to the library. They were able to use the accessibility features in Zoom to make it easier for them to understand what was going on. So for partnerships, we have quite a few partnerships with different organizations. One of the things that we want to do is to partner more with assisted living facilities in the next year. So we already go to several of them to do home delivery, but we want to be able to do more pop-up events at the assisted living facilities as well. Another one that has been really successful is our partnerships with the Silicon Valley Bike Coalition, who come to the library once a month to repair bikes, as well as give bike safety information. Okay, do you have any questions?
Do any board members have questions or comments for staff? I'll start from my left.
Put me on the spot. I just want to say that I saw you guys at the Pride Fest, because I was there with a different organization. And I was really impressed, because just the fact that you like were signing up people for library cards, like you brought everything you needed. You brought your computer, you had the books, and like drew people in. And like you also had really cute like little pins that you were giving away. So like when people came to, I was with the Free Mom Hugs, and we had stuff too, but you guys had better swag. So like when people like, I'm like, go check out the library table. They're right next door and they have really cool swag. So I was just really impressed that like you weren't just there. You were like actually like signing people up and loaning books, which was like, you were being a library out in the public, which was very impressive. It was great.
Thank you. Yeah, that is something that we want to do more of, is when we do outreach, actually bringing more of the library to people. It is hard because you have to bring a lot of things and sometimes no one borrows anything and you have to haul it all back, but it makes the library more accessible.
Yeah, that was us at the end of the night. We're like, just take everything, because if you don't take it, we have to carry it back. So, yeah. That was just it. I sort of like waffle with the social media stuff, because I understand, like, you don't have a social media person at the library, do you, who's like in charge, like, and so just sort of who's ever taking pictures at this event and then they'll post it, or like any of you post, or is there someone, or is it just the two of you who do it?
There's a few of us who post. It's not any of the staff, but it is divided between a few people.
Because I just found, because I mean, when I did social media for an organization years ago, and I know social media changes by the minute, and I'm old and I don't always get it, but that there are things that you can do, like, I feel like if you make a point of like scheduling things at like certain, like at certain intervals, like people come to expect it. Cause like, if you don't see them, I mean, like, I feel like, I mean, he's not here, but like Mayor Klein is like social media maven. He's like, I learned so much stuff from following him on Facebook, like things that are going on in the community, things like new places that have opened, obviously anything that has to do with food, but not even that, just like parks and events. And so I feel like, if you make a point of like, oh, we're going to post every, you know, Monday at this time, you know, just sort of like, and you can schedule these things and on a lot of the, but, and I think it's great that I think maybe more coordination with the city, because they seem to like, there's a person who's now, you said, in charge of it. So just, yeah, keep doing more of what you're doing. That's what I'm doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Board Member Hart. Board Member Lamb.
All right. Thank you for the presentation. I'm really intrigued by the work that you do with outreach and bringing the library to folks who find it more challenging to get to the library. My impression is that you could be doing so much more, you know, if you had infinite resources. So my question is, like, how do you determine when to stop?
So, yeah, as you said, a lot of our decisions on what programs we can bring out of the library are dependent on staff and time and how many events are happening around the same time. It seems like sometimes there's a perfect storm and every event is happening on the same weekend. But we do try to send as many people out as we can. Yeah, usually the limitation is only staff, but we do have a lot of staff who are flexible, like in our circulation department, who don't typically work on reference desk or do outreach, but a lot of them have been attending outreach and supporting that. So everyone is on board. It's just a matter of balancing schedules with everything else that's going in on in the library and then outside of the library.
Thank you, Board Member Lamb. Okay. Well, thank you, Lorena and Aiden, for the detailed presentation. Appreciate your efforts in outreaching, marketing, partnership on all what you're doing. And more importantly, you're building the community. Thank you for that. I have one simple clarifying question. Maybe it's me. I was trying to look for the calendar on the website, but I was not able to, the new website. So it is on the calendar is on.
Correct. So on our main webpage, you'll see a banner of upcoming larger events. And then off the side, you'll see the three programs that are most upcoming. And then if you click on library events, underneath that, it takes you to our full calendar. There's also a link on the top bar to library events. So it's not marked as calendar. Excuse me. Gonna need a bigger Ricola. but it is marked as library events. So that might be why it's a little bit harder to find.
I also wanted to clarify, it's not the print calendar, the cute print calendars that we have in the building. Those are not on the website. Those are just in the building. Yeah. We just have a live calendar so that if anything changes, we can go in and edit those details more easily.
Well, I must also mention, I love the pictures, the bird feeder, the rainbow. They're all so beautifully done. Well, thank you so much for your presentation. Anybody else? I'm good. Thank you. We are moving on to oral communication. This is now the public's opportunity to address the board on topics not listed on tonight's agenda and presentation items. This section is limited to 15 minutes and may be extended or continued after public hearing. General business section of the meeting. Individuals may only speak once during oral communication. This board meeting is a limited public forum, and the board can regulate the time, place, and manner of speech. Speaker comments during oral communication must be limited to matters within the board's authority, which is known as the board's subject matter jurisdiction. If a speaker's comments are outside the board's subject matter jurisdiction, the presiding officer will rule the speaker out of order. This allows the board to conduct its business in reasonably efficient manner and protects the right of other speakers. A speaker will not be ruled out of order because of disagreement with the content of this speech. Please submit a speaker card to the recording officer, raise your digital hand now, or dial 9 on a telephone to indicate you wish to speak. I will call on members of public participating in person, first followed by the remote participants. Speakers will have 3 minutes to speak. Do we have anyone wanting to speak under oral communication?
No, we have nobody online or in person wishing to speak at this time.
Thank you. I'll go ahead and open public comment on consent calendar items. Please submit a speaker card to the recording officer, raise your digital hand now, or dial *9 on a telephone to indicate you wish to speak. I will call on members of the public participating in person first, followed by the remote participants. Speakers will have 3 minutes to speak. Do we have anyone wanting to speak?
No, we have no one online or in person wishing to speak at this time.
Thank you. I will now close public comment. I'll now ask for a motion from my colleagues for approval of minutes.
I'll motion to approve the minutes from the last meeting.
I'll second the motion.
Is there any discussion or advocacy on the motion? Recording officer, please conduct a roll call vote.
Vice Chair Jetaconda?
Yes.
Board Member Hugh?
Yes.
Board Member Hod?
Yes.
Board Member Liu? Board Member Lamb?
Yes.
The motion passes.
Are we doing the Code of Ethics?
Public hearing?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, public hearing, our next item is 25-0783. Is there a staff report?
There's no staff report, but the code of ethics was included in the agenda packet. So hopefully everybody was able to review. And so we just need a motion that you've read and agree to abide by the code of ethics and conduct for elected and appointed officials.
Sure. Can I move it or the good? Okay. I'd like to make a motion to annual review of code of ethics and conduct for elected appointed officials. Second.
Yeah, I'll second the motion.
So go ahead and open public comment and then I'll take the vote.
Okay. Please submit a speaker card to the recording officer, raise your digital hand now, or dial 9 on a telephone to indicate you wish to speak. I will call on members of the public participating in person first, followed by the remote participants. Speaker will have 3 minutes to speak. Do we have anyone wanting to speak?
Nobody online or in person at this time.
Recording officer, please conduct a roll call vote.
Vice Chair Jetaconda.
Yes.
Board Member Hugh.
Yes.
Board Member Hod.
Yes.
Board Member Liu. Board Member Lam.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Moving on to our next item, 250784, selection of chair and vice chair. Are there nominations for the chair?
I'll nominate current vice chair Jetaconda for chair.
Are there further nominations for chair? Nominations for chair closed. Are there nominations for vice chair? I would like to nominate our vice chair, board member Hu, for vice chair. Are there further nominations for vice chair? Nominations for vice chair closed. I will go ahead and open the public hearing on this specific item. Please submit a speaker card to the recording officer. Raise your digital hand now or dial 9 on a telephone to indicate you wish to speak. I will call on members of public participating in person first, followed by a remote participant. Speakers will have 3 minutes to speak. Do we have anyone wanting to speak?
We have no one online or in person wishing to speak at this time.
I will now close public comment. We will conduct a voice vote in order of the nominations. The member receiving the most votes will be elected. Recording officer, please conduct votes for chair and vice chair.
Okay, we'll do chair first. So we're voting for Jetaconda for chair. Vice Chair Jetaconda.
Yes.
You accept? Okay. Board Member Hugh.
Yes.
Board Member Hod.
Yes.
Board Member Lam.
Yes.
Okay. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And then, so we're voting for who for vice chair? Vice Chair Jetaconda?
Yes.
Board Member Hugh?
Yes.
Board Member Hod?
Yes.
Board Member Lam?
Yes.
All right. Congratulations.
Yeah. Okay. The next portion of the agenda is for oral reports and announcement by board members and staff to share information. Do board members have any non-agenda items or comments? Okay. Does staff have any non-agenda items or comments?
Yes. As you know, I love to talk about all the different activities that are going on at the library. We're starting to kind of wrap up the exciting summer, Level Up at Your Library, and I just wanted to give you a little sneak preview of some stats. We've just really been going gangbusters. Staff passed on to me that in a recent check, we've shown over 7,000 attendees to the various summer programs we've held for all ages, and that includes 1,500 signups for the summer reading challenges itself. So we're just really, really excited about that. There is still time for people who have not signed up, even though we've given you many opportunities to sign up and get in on the fun. Signups close on August 31st, so there is still time to join the fun. earn some prizes and earn those tickets to the various drawings that will be done for the grand prizes at the end of the summer. Did also just want to highlight one upcoming special program for that's still coming up for Level Up Your Library, and that is a gaming day where our adult services staff are putting together a really fun day of different games and other activities to kind of just end the summer. So that'll be on August 24th. Come out for a variety of different digital and non-digital opportunities to play.
Any other comments? Okay, this meeting is adjourned at 8:15, and I want to thank everyone for your participation in tonight's meeting. Thank you.